every brew house, every brewery should be aiming for a consistent 90% brew house efficiency. When was the last time that you checked your mill gap? And when was the last time you calculated your brew house efficiency? And if you can't reliably answer that question, then it's time to check your mill gap and it's time to measure your brew house efficiency. G'day, brewers. Welcome to the Quality Focus Pro Brewers podcast. My name is Hendo. I'm from the Rockstar Brewer Academy. And as usual today, I'm joined by Adzi, the weapon, the legend. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. And how are you doing?
I am doing extremely good. What's been happening in your world?
Mate, just busy. Yeah, just trying to get on top of things, catch up with beer, obviously. But yeah, it's just getting, because I've got a new role, so... Yeah, I've only been there, it's been about a month now. So yeah, it's still just catching up, teething problems, working out all the little bits of information that I don't know and how to apply it. So yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Always is the way. I think it's gonna, every time you start a new job, it's going to take you like 3 months at least just to get into the groove and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's so, also too, I don't like being, ironically, what we're going to talk about today. I don't like being inefficient. And when you start a new job and you're behind the eight ball because there's all this stuff that you have to do, the first couple of weeks, you're trying to work out, A, what you've got to do, but then how to get ahead of the game. And that's, I'm nearly there. I'm nearly ahead of the game. I can see myself. I've started to overlap a couple of heavy weeks.
You went, yeah. Treading water and you're about to
That's
swim.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, fantastic, mate. That's so good to hear. Awesome. Mate, I thought we would talk a little bit about brew house efficiency today. How you feel about that?
That sounds good to me. Yeah, I've got some good questions. And I think too, it's an important topic that some people don't even know how to use the calculators or the information. So
mate, the most common problem I come across when like a brewer comes up to me at a trade show or something like that is they know what I do in regards of like being a coach for pro brewers and that sort of thing. But the problem, it's like a lot of these brewers, they put the cart before the horse and we start having conversations about being, as we were just saying just now, about being efficient. And so a really common thing is they come up, they go, well, how can I increase my mash efficiency? And we're not going to talk about mash efficiency today. We're going to talk about brew house efficiency. Yep. But it's like, well, hang on a second. Before you become efficient, I think it's really important that in the story of a brewery, particularly if you're new, that there's an order of things that you've got to solve, right? Because let's say you've got a brand new brewery, for instance, you've just commissioned it, you're doing your first batches of beer, and like you're thinking, okay, what problems do I need to solve? And there's a whole bunch of teething problems, new equipment, new processes, and all that sort of thing. And the order in which you should solve problems if you happen to have a new brewery is always safety first. Yep. And we'll do another episode 100%. About safety and that sort of thing. Always safety, then quality, and then efficiency, right? If you, there's no point being efficient if your beer is shit.
Mm.
Right,
so a lot of shit beer.
Yeah, you're making a lot of shit beer really efficiently, right? So making sure that you've got your safety, right? If you sort your safety first, you're going to have a brewery that has, I always say, a brewery that has a culture of safety, has a culture of quality. Solve your safety first, then solve your quality issues, get your quality up to par, then start working on your efficiency and that sort of thing, right? So, but today, let's put the cart before the horse and we'll talk a little bit about brew house efficiency, eh?
What I reckon it's good. I will stop you quickly though. Can you give a quick 2 or 3 sentence overview on the difference between brew house and mash efficiency? Because I think some people think they're one and the same and they're not. So if you can separate that alone.
Yeah, absolutely. So mash efficiency is the ability, if you're mashing, you've got grist, you've got hot water, you're going to be converting the starches in your grain into sugars, fermentable and non-fermentable sugars, right? That happens in your mash tun. Maybe you've got a mash slaughter tun or something like that. That's, and then the ability to be able to maximize the amount of sugars that are converted from starch into sugar, that's mash efficiency. But then you've got to separate those sugars out from your spent grain and get them in the kettle, get them making wort and into the fermenter and therefore making beer, right? So mash efficiency is your ability to convert starches into sugars. Brew house efficiency is your ability to not only convert those starches into sugars, but to get those sugars into the kettle and separated from the spent grain. So it includes both mashing and lautering, is what brew house efficiency is. Typically, brew house efficiency is measured at the start of boil, pre-boil, right? So when you finish your lauter, you finish your sparge, you've got a whole bunch of wort with a volume of wort with a certain amount of gravity in the kettle ready to boil, that's where you take your brew house efficiency number.
Yeah, cool. Nice. It's good.
All there right. You go.
Yeah. You wrapped it up more succinctly than I expected. So.
Well, you told me only like two or three sentences.
Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, you waffle. So.
It was a bit more. I do.
Yeah, right. Well, mate, you've talked about like what brew house efficiency is in that little bit, but go into more into depth. Like, let's dig deep on what it is and some of the factors that can contribute and detract from making your efficiency either better or worse.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So you're saying what are the factors that are going to make help to enhance or work against my efficiency on a brew day?
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. Is that what you're asking? Yeah, good. Okay. So a couple of misconceptions that happen quite a lot, right? Is firstly, a lot of say home brewers who go pro or even some brewers who've been professionals for years and years and years and been running for a long time. The number one thing I think you've got going against you if you in your quest for increasing your brew house efficiency is not paying attention to it and not tracking it, right? If you're taking good batch notes, if you've got like a batch log sheet or you're using some sort of brewery management system, BU30, ECOS, whatever, if you're not tracking the numbers, then you can't see how well you're doing, right? And then the second thing that happens is that a lot of brewers don't know how to calculate brew house efficiency. There's quite a bit of misinformation out there, like we just spoke about the confusion between mash efficiency and brew house efficiency, and getting on top of brew house efficiency and learning how to calculate brew house efficiency that doesn't involve a spreadsheet or some sort of online calculator. Actually learning the formula, right? They're not difficult, right? And then the third thing I think that holds brewers back from becoming more efficient in their mashing and lautering is thinking that being inefficient is craft or it's artisanal and that sort of thing. And I don't think that there could be anything further from the truth, right? Because here in 2024, the industry is going through a very tough time. Inflation is here. The cost, have a think about how the cost of your malt and how much that's gone up in the last sort of 2 years, right? And if you're not paying attention to your brew house efficiency, you are leaving sugars in your lauter tun, right? And you're throwing that out with your spent grain, okay? And to give you an example of why it's so important, right, to pay attention to it, right? So if you could extract more wort and therefore more beer from one turn, one brew, Americans call it turn.
Yeah, okay.
We call it brew in Australia, but there you go. It's just like freedom units, really, isn't it? and so the thing is, let's say you've got a 10-barrel or 10-hectolitre brew house, right? And you're currently doing, and I'm actually doing this at the moment with a little brewery that I run down in Melbourne. I'm flying down there tomorrow, right? And I went and had a look at the numbers recently, and this brew house is a 5-hectolitre brew house, but I'll extrapolate it to 10, right? So it's currently getting 70% brew house efficiency. Now you might think, oh, that's not too bad, right? And so what's actually happening is that realistically, there shouldn't be a reason for any brew house to achieve a 90% brew house efficiency, right? None at all, right? if we got this brew house, and let's say I doubled its size, for instance, from 70% to 90%, we would be producing per turn, per brew, an extra 2.5 barrels or 300 litres of wort from the same amount of grain.
And that turns into beer, which turns into money in your pocket from the same,
100%.
Same brew.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we were to turn that extra 300 litres of wort, right, 2.5 barrels of wort into beer that we would sell in our tap room, well, that's worth anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 of revenue over the tap room per brew. And so here's the thing. So while you can be all artisanal and you can sit and hide in your corner and go, oh, the cost of raw materials is going up, but if you're not using them efficiently, right, good on you.
Yeah, and it also means that you don't always have to get out that efficiency from growing to a bigger brew house. It can mean you just need to use less malt.
Absolutely. One of the things that I love doing when you know, on the rare occasions that I do consulting work is making sure that a brewery can extract as much product as it possibly can from the equipment that it currently has. Yep. A lot of breweries, they struggle with being able to expand. There might be a lack of floor space. There might be a lack of operating capital and that sort of thing.
And the brewery where you're going definitely suffers that because it's packed in.
25 square meters. It's exactly. And it's a fishbowl. It's in glass, brownstone. It's amazing. They can't grow, right? And there's one fermenter and two bright tanks, and we actually converted the bright tanks into uni tanks by putting some racking arms in just so we could increase production. And lo and behold, we can produce lots of beer there, and we can't expand the floor space. Yeah. But with only three effectively uni tanks, we've got at least usually anywhere from 7 or 8 different SKUs, different beers on tap at any one time. So, yeah, you've got to be efficient. You've got what you've got. If you can't afford to upgrade your brewery, then you've got to be working on making the most out of what you've got.
100%. Is it a gradient scale based on size of the brewery on efficiency? Like if you've got, say, a 5-hec and a 10-hec, does it easily double your efficiency? Or is it, as you get bigger brew house, can you get better efficiency and get more?
I think it's one of the things that brew house efficiency is one of the things that's linear, right? Because what brew house efficiency is it's a percentage, okay? So it's a percentage of the maximum amount of the maximum theoretical amount of sugars that you can extract from your mash versus what you actually get, right? Based on your starter boil volume and gravity, right? And so with the potential, it's called TPE, which stands for total potential extract, okay? So you have your total extract, TE, right, which is basically what you got for it through your mashing and lautering versus your TPE, which is the maximum that's theoretically possible, okay? That's a percentage, all right? And so it is linear, right? So whether you've got a very small brew house, so you've got a 1 barrel or a 2.5 barrel brew house, to go from 70% to 90% is an extra 50 litres of product.
Yeah.
Right. So it's totally, it doesn't matter if you're small or if you're big, it's totally worth it to chase that efficiency.
And that can help you, right, with you've got your recipe and you've done it on your pilot kit and then you want to put it on the big kit. That can help you to expand up.
Well, absolutely. Of course, exactly. So if you're going to go from 70% to 90% brew house efficiency, one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to fill your fermentation vessels more, right, which means you can brew more beer with the same number of tanks that you've already got, or you're going to use less malt and save money on your unit cost. So let's say that your tanks, you can't create more volume out of your brew house because you're going to overfill your tanks and that sort of thing. Well, don't overfill your tanks because then you're just putting wort down the drain. But what you can do is reduce the grain load on each brew and therefore reduce your raw materials costs with regards to malt and all of your process aids and that sort of thing. So I tend to prefer extracting the volume, because I think that a full tank is a tank that's making money. And so you want to make sure your tanks are as full as they possibly can be. There are nuances around that, particularly around carbonation, but that's outside of the scope of this conversation. But most certainly get your tanks full.
Yeah, and a full tank doesn't mean full. It means full to where it works based on your yeast and what you need for it to make the beer properly. But it doesn't mean fill the thing right up just because you can extract it.
Just because you can. Yeah, exactly. So, but the point is that if you can produce, let's say you've got this 10 hectoliter, 10 barrel brew house, and you're producing an extra 250 to 300 liters of product for out of the same tank in the same floor space for the same amount of labor and a pretty comparable amount of energy and all that sort of thing. And the only thing that's going to change is the cost of your packaging materials, because you've got more product to pack. That's a win, man.
100%. That's a huge win.
Oh, it's massive. Absolutely.
So what is going to affect brew house efficiency? What are some of the things that are going to be the best to target?
If you're going to go down the path of increasing your brew house efficiency, right, you've got to think about the variables, right, with regards to the things that change your brew house efficiency. Okay, now it's a common misconception, right, that you have to set your mill up with a really, really fine crush, right, so that you expose all of the starches so that they'll all convert.
Yeah, that biggest surface area thing. That.
Yeah, exactly, right? And while that will give you better mash efficiency, you're going to wind up with this stodgy porridge that you're not going to be able to separate in your lauter tun and get it into your kettle, right? Because your lautering is going to be terrible. You're going to have a really tight grain bed.
Yeah, your sparge is going to just get stuck.
It's going to go really slow, and it's going to and the thing is, mate, it's going to channel, right? And you're going to have your sparge liquor channeling through your grain bed. Your runoff is going to be slow as well, so it's going to cost you time. But the channeling is the key thing, right? So your sparge liquor, as it progresses through your grain bed, will always take the path of least resistance, okay? And so if you've got a really tight grain bed because your mill gap is so tight, then what's going to happen is typically the sparge liquor goes around the outside of the grain bed, right, and doesn't rinse the sugars out of the grain bed. So you're effectively putting water into your kettle and not work, not runnings, that sort of thing, right? So counterintuitively, a coarse crush is better than a fine crush if you think about brew house efficiency.
Yep.
Right. And we'll talk about like mill gaps and that sort of thing in a second, right? But so that's one of the variables, right? Is your crush and the permeability of your grain bed. Mash temperature is a variable. Okay. The higher your mash temperature, the more brew house efficiency and the more conversion you're going to get. And the less viscous your wort is going to be, so it's going to help you separate it from your spent grain, okay? Now, you've got to balance this against what you're trying to achieve with your beer and your finishing gravity and that sort of thing, all right? But the higher the mash temperature, the higher the brew house efficiency, okay? Liquor to grist ratio, okay? The amount of strike water versus the amount of grist you've got going into your mash tun, it makes a difference, okay? If you have a real stiff mash with a very low liquor to grist ratio, your brew house efficiency is going to be lower, okay? The thinner your mash is, right, the higher your brew house efficiency is going to be. We're really lucky here in 2024 because the maltsters have done such an amazing job getting the diastatic power, the enzymatic, the concentration of enzymes in the malt up so high that we can actually have quite thin mashes and create the same amount of conversion,
yep,
right? Because it's easier to collect first. If you collect lots of first runnings before you start sparging, you're going to, that means you're getting the sugars out of your lauter tun and into the kettle, right? Whereas if you've got a really stiff mash with not much strike liquor and a lot of grain, the onus is on the sparge.
Yeah, you're relying on the sparge to
get rinsing the grains out. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's easier to get first runnings out than it is to get to sparge those sugars out, right? Your lautering technique plays a big role in brew house efficiency. I ran a session with the Rockstar Brewer Academy community a couple of weeks ago about this very topic. Yep. And I asked them in the chat during the session, how long is it taking to lauter? And some of them were lautering as quickly as 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, slow down. It's like too fast.
It's good
right?
to be efficient.
Too
but...
but it's good to be efficient, just not that efficient, right? And so your lautering speed and your lautering technique makes a massive difference, right? Start slow with your first runnings and monitor the gravity and the pH of the runnings. We have a really cool tool called the Lauter Cheat Sheet that we use in the Rockstar Brewer Academy community, which helps you keep an eye on that. And so by basically keeping an eye on that every 15 minutes, aim for somewhere between 60 and 90 minutes for your lauter. 75 is my pretty much go-to. Yep. And keep an eye on your runnings, right? Make sure that your last runnings gravity isn't too high, because if you've got last runnings gravity that's sitting at 6 Plato or 10, 20 something SG, well, there's sugars that are still in the
water. It's still extracting.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And I think the last, we talked about permeability of the grain bed, which relates to the coarseness of your crush with your mill. So you don't need to crush your grain fine. You need to actually have it quite coarse.
Is that where you find some people are using the like rice hulls to push in so that they can keep that grain crush quite small and then use rice hulls to have that differentiation so that it does have the permeability?
If you're doing something like a hazy IPA, something that's got a lot of adjunct like oats or wheat or flaked wheat or something like that that doesn't have a husk in your lauter, then obviously you're going to need to reach for the rice hulls occasionally and that sort of thing. But if you've got an all barley mash and you're having to reach for the rice hulls in order to successfully lauter that mash, then you've got a grain crush issue and it's probably a little bit too tight. It's not difficult to do a grist analysis, right? One of the cool things that we did in our brewhouse efficiency session the other week is I taught the community how to do a grist analysis with just one sieve that you can get from Amazon for like 50 bucks. Like it's not hard to check your mill and to actually keep a constant eye on your mill gap settings, right? It's like, if you're listening to this right now, when was the last time that you checked your mill gap, right? And when was the last time you calculated your brew house efficiency? And if you can't reliably answer that question, then it's time to check your mill gap and it's time to measure your brew house efficiency.
Yeah, we used to have at Helios with Charlie, we used to have a chart for each grain, each malt provider and each different malt on which gap we wanted to use for the malt. So while I was on the mill, I'd be pouring in a bag and adjusting that to
on the fly
to each grain that we wanted to use, so that because we knew what we could get out of it. And if it was up or down, like it affected our beers. So yeah, we had a big chart there with everything. And like you're talking in millimeters, some of these settings, but
that sounds but it makes a difference, right? This is the thing, right? So with Brownstone Brewery that I run in Melbourne, we have a Great Northern Bud Light type beer, right? And that uses domestic base malt. And then we have a Pilsner, which is done with Wyman Pilsner malt. Now, if you grab a handful of your domestic malt and a handful of the good German, whatever German maltster you happen to use, if you have a look at those corns, those barley corns side by side, they're different sizes.
Mm. Yep.
Right. In my experience, the Wyman corns, barley corns, much bigger than the domestic ones. Now, that doesn't mean the domestic malt is worse or not as good or anything like that. It just means that if you're going to extract the most you can out of them, then the mill gap's got to change because it's got to be slightly wider for your Wyman, because otherwise you're going to crush it into a fine powder and get channeling and not get that brew house efficiency. And likewise, if you keep the gap wide and you put the smaller domestic malt through it, well, some of those grains might not get crushed at all.
Yep.
Right. And then they're not going to convert and not wind up in the kettle at all. So absolutely, you've got to keep an eye on your mill gap religiously. Yeah, well,
it can change too between brews, but also it's a piece of equipment that it's vibrating, it's on, it's shaking and doing stuff. Those little things can change. And that little gap, just you're going, oh, I don't know what's happened. I've missed my target this time. And you start looking at why, and those are the little things that
I've had that happen. Can I share a dumb story with you?
Right.
So I had that happen once where, and this was at Brownstone, where I was brewing myself and that sort of thing, and the little locking nut just vibrated out and did its thing, and I put a bag of, I think it was like crystal malt through or something like that, and threw it in and just didn't even look, didn't even check I milled into a sack. Threw it in and was wondering why I wasn't getting the gravity or the efficiency that I was supposed to get and that sort of thing. And I looked at the spent grain and there was all these uncracked grains. I'm like, man, what the hell happened?
Whole grain sitting in there.
Yep. Welcome to Hendo World.
We're good for the crystal molds. They go, man, good cook lesson. My ass off. Forget to just...
Good lesson.
Yeah. You talked about like the sieve and that, like, what is this $50 sieve from Amazon? Is it just a kitchen sieve? What have you got?
No. So you can buy on Amazon, as usual, you can buy anything you like, right? But basically you only need one sieve in order to do the grist analysis, right? And so to make it really simple, because you can go into bigger breweries and even the one that we had at TAFE at the Technical College there, that was a series of three sieves, right? And we were weighing the fractions of each and that sort of thing, right? You only need one, right? Because just to start, if you want to get three, that's fine, right? ASBC, the American Society for Brewing Chemists, has a method on doing a grist analysis, which involves three different sieves of three different sizes, right? Now, if you're a very large brewery, maybe you're one of the mega corporate brewers and all that sort of thing, and you're making Bud Light and millions of liters or barrels of it, then, and you've got a six roller mill, right? You're going to want to check out those fractions, but most craft brewers don't have that. They've got a two roller mill, right? It's a dry mill. It's not a wet mill. And it's really, really simple. It's almost like a lot of the Chinese mills that you get are actually agricultural mills for doing like chook feed and all that sort of stuff, right? So you can get away with one sieve, right? And all you're looking for is just to make sure that you've got enough, that your grains are cracked. There's no uncracked grains. Right. So you want your grist to be as coarse as possible to make sure that you've got no uncracked grains. And one sieve will basically do the job there.
We can probably dive into grist analysis and stuff on another chat. But what you're talking before at the start about the easy formulas and stuff, have you got them on hand? Can you also include them in the show notes and stuff so that people can?
It's pretty common knowledge. It's probably a little bit hard to read it out to you and expect someone listening to the show to be able to understand what's going on. Because there's a lot of brackets and that sort of thing. But let's talk about the inputs that go into that formula, right? So brew house efficiency is basically total efficiency divided by total potential efficiency, and that gives you a percentage, right? That's brew house efficiency, right? It depends if you're using metric or if you're using freedom units. There are different formulae for calculating total efficiency, right? But provided you know the volume of wort you've got in your kettle at the start of boil, post-lautering, post-sparge, and you know the gravity of that wort in the kettle, post-boil, post-sparge, pre-boil, right, then you can calculate your total efficiency, and that's going to give you a number. Now, you need to make sure that when you're using these formulae for total efficiency and total potential efficiency, that you are either a Plato barrels and pounds of grain brewery, or that's freedom units, or you are a liters, SG and kilograms brewery. Okay. I'm pretty sure when you're working with Charlie Helios, I bet you he was kilos and Plato and liters or hectoliters, was he?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so he mixed them up, right? And so with these, with your brew house efficiency formulae, before you do anything, do the conversion. So you're either SG liters, kilograms, or your Plato barrels, pounds, right? You have to be all three. You can't switch between the two. The formulas just don't work, right? So make sure you got all your numbers lined up that way, right? So total efficiency is basically if you're an SG liters and kilograms brewer, right? It's basically number of gravity units multiplied by the number of liters of wort you've got, right? So if I've got 550 liters of wort at 1047, it's 47 times 550, right? And that's going to give you a number, 25,000 or something like that. Don't worry about that number. That's just your total extract, right? But then you get and it's a little different for freedom units, right? Which I won't go to because that one's a little bit more complicated. Still doable though. And then you need to work out your total potential efficiency, right? Now, in order to find the total potential efficiency, you've got to go and read your malt certificate of analysis from your maltster.
Yep.
Okay. And what you're looking for is the coarse grind as is number from your COA, right? If you are buying your malt from someone who does not provide you with a COA on each and every delivery, go and find a new supplier because they're doing you a disservice, okay? Good distributors, your Bintanis, your BSGs, your Country Malts or whatever you happen to use, right? They will always supply the COAs with each and every order, right? And if you don't get that, then you're missing information. So the key number that you want to get is your coarse grind as is number. Okay. If you read the COA, you'll find that number. And basically what it is there's a formula that determines the amount of extract as in sugars that you can get based on that percentage, right? And the TPE formula can be a bit long because if you've got some base malt, you've got some Munich malt, you've got some crystal malt, you might have some oats, wheat or something like that. They've all got different numbers and you've got different proportions in your mash and you need to take those into consideration. So that formula can be a little bit complicated, not overly, but it's basically taking in the total potential extract from each of those grains that are in your mash.
Yep.
That's going to give you another number and it's divide your TE divided by your TPE and lo and behold, there's your brew house efficiency.
Nice.
Pretty cool one. It's such an eye opener because once what your brew house efficiency is and knowing that your brew house should be doing 90%, right? And if that's not important to you, then all good on you. Good luck surviving in the current economic climate. But every brew house, every brewery should be aiming for a consistent 90% brew house efficiency. But you've got to do it.
Also, it's not only just the moneymaker, it's the consistency of beer, right? Because you're making batch to batch, it's going to be different. Yeah. So you want to know it.
Correct. And so if you're finding that you're not adjusting your mill gap when you change your base malt, right, and therefore you're getting a different crush, your quality is going to be affected. If you increase by increasing your brew house efficiency to a consistent level, that is going to help you get some beer consistency outcomes. Because if you don't get that right, you're going to have conversion issues. Your number one problem with mill gaps being out is attenuation issues, like final gravity and that sort of thing. If you're not on top of the consistency around your brew house efficiency there, you're going to have variance in your finishing gravities and that's going to have an impact on the organoleptic outcome of the beer.
Yeah. That's good. Is there anything I've missed? Is there anything that you've missed?
No.
That you want?
I think we've got everything you need to know. So if the next steps, right, this is what I would encourage you to do if you're listening to this, right? You can go and find out your brew house efficiency right now. If you've got your batch notes, right, and your starter boil volume and your starter boil gravity and the grain that went into the mash tun, go baseline your current brew house efficiency, right? Go find out. You might be surprised. You might be doing okay, right? And go do this for multiple different beers in your lineup, right? You might be surprised. You might find if you're doing 70%, you've got a lot of room for improvement. And if you need a hand with that, reach out to me. I'd be happy to have a chat to you about that. But the thing is, go find out where your brew house efficiency is.
You got to know where you're at.
Right? And yeah, and then you can start to work on some of those variables in order to lift that brew house efficiency. That would be my advice to you.
Nice. That's great.
Hey, don't forget that you can come and join the conversation in the Quality Focused Pro Brewers Facebook group. If you go to qualityfocusedprobrewers.com, you'll get all the links to the Spotify and YouTube and Apple Music and all that sort of stuff. But there's also a link there to come and join the conversation at the Quality Focused Pro Brewers Facebook group. It's free to join. Just make sure that you answer the membership questions when you go to join, because we keep it a pro brewer only safe space and that sort of thing. Love you, but we're a pro brewer only group and that sort of thing. And come and join us. Come and join the conversation. We'd be happy to answer any questions and that sort of thing. I post loads of bonus content over there and that sort of thing as well. Come and join us. Adzi.
Sounds good.
Thanks very much,
mate. No worries. That was good. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Too easy, mate. Mate, have an awesome day and we'll catch you in the next episode.
See you then.